Hello, and welcome to the Zenith Bank Half Year 2017 Investor and Analyst Conference Call. Throughout this call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there'll be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present Mr. Peter Mainge, MD and CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. Let me welcome you to our half year conference call for 2017. My name is Peter Mainge, the CEO of Zenith Bank PLC. With me this afternoon on this call, I have our Deputy Managing Director, Ebenezer Onyeagu. I have Mr. Michael Anyima, our Group Treasurer and Head Investor Relations. I have Stanley Amuchie, our Chief Financial Officer. I have Mukhtar Adams, our Deputy Chief Financial Officer, and I have Felix Egbon, our Chief Risk Officer. Thank you very much for dialing in on this call. I want to go ahead very quickly by looking at the environment we've operated in the last 6 months. For the economy, for the industry, we've seen a marked improvement when compared to the same period last year, 2016. Though GDP declined 0.52% year-on-year in Q1, but it is expected that for Q2, we should have a marked improvement. Also, headline inflation declined to 16.1% year-on-year, and is expected that this should even improve further by about 50 basis points. All the other macroeconomic indicators are already posted in our presentation. I would also want to look at some of the events in the banking sector, particularly the introduction of certain reforms in our foreign exchange policies. In April 2017, the Central Bank of Nigeria introduced the investors and exporters window for foreign exchange. I must say that this has helped significantly in reducing the pressure on the foreign exchange market, and also giving better clarity, openness, and transparency in the management of the foreign exchange. Since the introduction in April 2017, the R&E window has traded over $4 billion, and this is actually a massive improvement when compared to what happened in 2016. Of course, we also still have the NYFEX window, where a lot of transactions still take place. Currently, we are the industry, including the Central Bank, we are working towards a convergence of all these rates. With what we've achieved so far, I believe that the gap has been massively narrowed down, and we expect that there will be convergence sooner than later. Although Nigeria is still in recession, but we believe that the environment is slightly better when compared to 2016. I want to go into some specifics about Zenith Bank in the first half of the year. In May 2017, we issued the second tranche of our Eurobond, $500 million, and it was a massive success. It was massively oversubscribed by over 200%, and the discount rate was also very attractive, in fact, the best so far of all issuance we've had in 2017. Our Eurobond has also empowered us as a bank when you look at our result on our P&L, you see our trading income where we recorded a significant improvement in our trading income. Essentially, what we've done, we've done certain transactions in trading and swap transactions with different counterparties, and those are the things that have accounted for the increase you will see in our trading income. Our investment in treasury bills and government instruments has also gone up as a result of our focus on risk reduction and increased activity in our treasury trading. I will also want to observe that under impairment charge, you will have seen that our impairment charge also went up. This was done deliberately to take care of some of the losses we see in some of our credit portfolio. Specifically, if you look at the impairment charge, we have a significant one coming from the telecoms sector and also the aviation sector. And with what we've done, we believe that we've been very prudent in taking all these provisions, whether by way of specific or collective, to ensure that as this risk manifests, we take care of them almost immediately. And I must also say that we've built sufficient buffer to take care of any future diminution in the quality of our risk portfolio. I will also want to talk a little about our OPEX. You will also see the increase in our operating expenses. And this, I'll probably say, is attributable mainly to our AMCOM charge, which normally we spread over a period of 12 months. But with IFRIC 21, which states that levies must be charged immediately, we've taken all our AMCOM charge within this half year. And the implication of that is that our OPEX will be high in 6 months, but on a 12-month basis, it will moderate because we don't expect that will continue. We've already taken the charge in half year. So essentially, that takes care of AMCON. And also, we should not be unmindful of the increase in cost of goods and services, which also contributed to the increase in expenses generally. But we are working on that to ensure that by full year, we should be within our guidance. So at this stage, I want to hand you over to our Chief Financial Officer, Stanley, to take us through details of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay, good afternoon. I will start from slide 8 on the financial highlights. We have continued as a bank to improve on our creativity and risk management, and that has helped us to build a shockproof balance sheet. We have our gross earnings increasing 77.1% year on year to 380.4 billion. Net interest income also went up 9.4% year on year to 138.9 billion. Non-interest income also went up 253% year on year to 118 billion. Also, profit before tax was strong at 92.18 billion, 71% year-on-year growth. PAT as well went up 112% year-on-year to 75.3 billion. On the balance sheet, we have gross loans dropping a bit by 2.6% year-to-date, and that's also in line with what the condition of the market. We played more in the money market, and that has reflected in a little drop in loans and advances. Also, our total assets went up 4, 6.0% year to date. Customer deposits was flat at 2.97 trillion year to date. And then total shareholders fund went up to 7.719 billion, which is 2.1% year to date. Again, loans to deposit ratio was strong at 66.2%. Liquidity ratio also very strong at 61%. NPL ratio went up, as has already been explained, because of our posture to take care of most of the loans we feel could have issues, and we've made provisions aggressively on that. We also have our capital adequacy ratio still remaining strong at about 21%, much above the requirement for the business we're doing. We'll have cost of funds going up 6.4% because of the condition of the market, which was a very high interest market that we saw within the first half of the year. That also affected our net interest margin, which came to 7.6%. Cost to income ratio, as we explained, was at 57.1%, and then cost of risk was 3.6%. So if we go to the next slide, which is slide 9, that shows the profit and loss statement. Again, you will see most of the items I've already highlighted: gross earnings, interest income, all that went up, as already mentioned, and then also shows a very strong bottom line and profitability. Then the next slide, slide 10, shows a trend in our net interest margin. And it's, the trend shows a drop from about 7.7% in the first quarter to 7.6%. And majorly the reason is because of the high interest rate, especially on time deposits, which contributed very well to the decline in NIMs. Also, cost-to-income ratio, as has been shown here, I would say it was flat if you compare it year-on-year, 57 in June 2016 and 57% also in June 2017. Again, it was mentioned that AMCON was a major one, AMCON charge, which in line with IFRIC 21, we needed to charge it as a levy in the first half of the year. That frees up about 10 billion for the second half of the year. PBT was also a very strong, showed a very strong performance in PBT at 92.2 billion for the first half of the year. Slide 11 shows our interest income distribution, showing strong performance, especially on treasury bill income, which grew 154%. We also have loans and advances income coming from that going up 35%, and interbank placement went up also 195%. Slide 12 shows a breakdown of non-interest income and a clear income diversification. We have most of the income lines going up. The major one that has been explained is on the trading income, which went up because of the activities we did in the market, especially the trading activities for swap and treasury bill trading. We also have our credit-related fees also going up by 36%. Fees on electronic products also went up, and a host of other income lines that went up under non-interest income. Overall, we achieved a 254% growth in non-interest income in the first half of the year. The next slide, slide 13, shows our interest expense distribution. Having most of, we saw interest expense going up by 127% year on year, and the major cost came from increase in time deposits, which went up 210%. And basically what has happened in the market one is a variety of issues. It was a very, the market saw a very high increase in pricing of deposits, majorly because treasury bill rates were high in the market, and therefore to retain even the deposits we had, we have to pay higher prices for those deposits. We also have situations where in the market there were treasury bonds, savings bonds were sold to low savers, and that also increased the pricing of deposits in the market. Also within this period, we saw CBN coming in to issue a revised guide to bank charges where deposits which were held as collaterals, we had to pay interest on them at about 30% of MPR. So a combination of this, including the fact that we just issued a euro bond and had to accrue for the rates for it, you know, I contributed to the high, the increase we saw in interest expense for the first half of the year. Now, if we go to slide 14, that shows our total operating expenses. Would mention most of the items, especially the income premium. That would be very clear from it, that we took the whole income premium for the year within the first half of 2017. Other costs attributed to activities went up because of the inflationary pressures within this period. Now, the next slide is slide 15. That's about the balance sheet. It also shows our strong and liquid balance sheet with continued growth led by all the parameters, most of them treasury bill and most of the liquid assets that we've seen that has grown within this period. Go to the next slide, slide 16, talks about liabilities and equity. We've seen our shareholders' funds also going up about 2.1% year to date, and our total assets and total liabilities also went up as well. The next slide is slide 17, and the slide 17 is also the FX balance sheet, assets and liabilities, which shows, that's what is shown here, and shows a breakdown of all the loans and deposits in currency-wise. The next slide then is slide 18, which shows a trend of our loan growth, deposit growth, a breakdown of our loans and advances, and deposit mix. Again, it's very clear from this that term loans, for instance, is a major part of our loan mix, while our deposits will still continue to achieve a good percentage of our deposit in CASA, both demand and savings account deposits, while term deposits constitute about 16.6% of our total deposits. The next slide is slide 19. It also shows the high quality of our liquid assets with diversified sources of funding. So we see our liquid assets about year-on-year growing by 16%. While it's broken down, the breakdown shows the contributions to our funding, you know, with deposits, customer deposits being a major part of it. The next slide shows the geography, our P&L by geography. And from there, Nigeria continues to be a major source of our gross earnings, contributing about 92% of our total earnings, while the rest of Africa and Europe contribute about 8.5%. Also, we are broken down in slide 21, our P&L by sector. And again, it shows in the contribution of revenue that large corporates remain a major source of our gross earnings, contributing about 63.4% of our gross earnings, while the public sector and small and medium corporates contribute the rest. Also, we'll go to slide 22, talks about the loans and deposits by sector. We have, on the deposits, we have large corporates and small and medium corporates and retail contributing a major part of our total deposits. And we have also shown a breakdown of our gross loans on this slide. So on slide 24, talks about our risk management and the trend of our NPL coverage and NPL ratio. We've seen that our NPL coverage went up to 117% from 100.9% in the first quarter of the year because of the additional provisions we've made for facilities both in the aviation and the communication sectors of the economy. Also, we saw NPL also growing to about 4.3% from 3.2% in the first quarter of the year. That also was as a result of all the provisions we've made to take care of all the risk in these sectors. The next slide is slide 22, which shows our loan by sector and a clear diversification of loans, bearing in mind all the risk factors. I will make sure that our loans are well diversified. Then the next slide is slide 23, also shows our foreign currency loans, restructured loans, with restructured loans contributing about 11.8% of our total loans, and majority of it, about 86% in the oil and gas sector. Also, our foreign currency loans contribute about 41% of our total loans. The next slide is slide 27, which is a breakdown of our NPLs by sector. What will be very glaring here will be the movement between in transportation. If you look at the financial year 2016 and 2017 half year, there's a clear movement in the transportation sector, and that's majorly because of the provisioning we did in the aviation sector. And also you will notice a dip in power sector because also most of the provisions we made in the power sector, we've seen a lot of improvement in the repayment ability of the loans, and therefore they had to be declassified. The next slide is slide 28, also shows our capitalization with strong liquidity. The bank has remained very liquid and with strong capital, and that has been our trend over the years, and we will continue in that manner. Also, our capital mix is positively skewed to Tier 1 capital, and that is the trend the bank has adopted over the years. So I therefore hand over to the MD to summarize on the strategy going forward to the second half of the year. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Stanley, for your presentation. I will actually want to conclude by saying that the next half year should be very exciting. The market has been fairly stable, save for the tight monetary stance of the Central Bank of Nigeria. We expect that interest rate will continue to be under pressure, as we've seen in the last 3 months. But as a bank, we are very determined to ensure that we do what we need to do to ensure consistency in our revenue. Going forward, we are looking at a risk minimization strategy, and we believe that the consequence of the devaluation that we saw last year and the recession itself, that we've taken care of a significant percentage of what we believe will develop into NPLs. If we have any reason to provide for any facility, we will not hesitate to do that. And we'll continue to build buffers to ensure that those other latent losses that we cannot see immediately, that they will be taken care of and they will not come as a shock. So bearing any unforeseen circumstances, we expect that our 6 months performance, we should be able to replicate that in the next half year. So I want to thank you and open the floor for questions and answers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, could you please press 0 and then 1? On your phone keypad to enter the queue, and then after I announce you, simply ask that question. And if you find that question has been answered before it's your turn to speak, just press 0 and then 2 to cancel. And there'll be a brief pause while the questions are being asked. Our first question is over to the line of Tulu Alamutu of Exotics Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the call today. I just have a few quick questions, please. The first is on asset quality. Would it be possible to shed a little bit more light on what happened in the general commerce sector? I know you talked about transport and that being linked to additional problem loans in aviation, but any light you can shed on general commerce would be helpful. Also, could you please give us some detail on what your coverage is now on the Etisalat loan, given that you said you've taken more provisions against the telecom sector? And finally, on asset quality, could you please explain why you released provisions of about 8.4 billion in the first half? Are these related to loans or are these related to other aspects or other assets? Secondly, on foreign currency loans, could you maybe just tell us how much of the total is to companies that do not generate foreign currency? Third thing on Zenith Insurance, which really wasn't mentioned, I think, on the call. Obviously, I know it's a separate business, but what do you think the indirect impact will be from any cross-selling arrangements you might have, given that Zenith Insurance has been sold? And finally, on the swap arrangements, which you said contributed to trading income, could you just maybe tell us a little bit more about the counterparties in the swap? Is this just the CBN, or are there other Nigerian banks that you're working with on those transactions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me start by saying that Zenith Insurance, what they had with Prudential has nothing to do with the bank. Zenith, we divested from Zenith Insurance, not this year. We divested from Zenith Insurance much before now. What you probably will have read in the papers or what happened is between Zenith Insurance and Zenith Life and Prudential. And that really has no impact on the bank as it is. In terms of the issue of referral, I think Central Bank, they've already clarified that between Central Bank and Nicon in terms of what type of bank assurance model do we want to run in Nigeria. And they've said it should be limited only to referrals. So in terms of risk or any other third-party liability, I think we expect it to be zero. We don't expect much from that. If you go to slide 27, I think that's where we highlighted the provisions. You talked about general commerce. We are looking at what we have there is the each of the industry or sector as a percentage of the total loans. Yes, we have what we've done essentially, if you look at the EMTS, which you asked specifically that what percentage have we taken on that? We've actually taken about 30% of EMTS as provision, which we believe is very prudent at this stage because the company is still undergoing restructuring, restructuring as to getting them prepared for eventual sale to new investors. So the provision we've taken of 30%, we believe it's very is very prudent. We've also taken provision on a client in the aviation sector. Then you talked about the issue of the swap transactions that we've done. Yeah, we've done transactions mainly with the sovereign, and we don't have any transaction, I'll probably say, with local banks in terms of swap, maybe about 1% or thereabout, but it's a very small percentage that we've done with local banks. Then you talk about also general commerce, what we have there in terms of provision. I know you are talking about the percentage itself. Essentially, what we've done, our provisioning is not limited to telecoms and aviation. We also have some other provisions in general commerce, and that's what you see there, some NPLs rather. Then the provisions that we released, not all of them have to do with credit. And you will have seen the analysis. If you check under OPEC, you will see the other income, you will see the 8 billion,
8
point something billion that was released there. That was actually a provision that we made for some contingencies which have nothing to do with credit. And those issues have been completely resolved. There were basically disagreements in terms of charges and all that. So those have been resolved, and naturally we have to release those provisions. They've been resolved early in the year. So I hope I've covered all your questions. Is there anyone I've omitted?
Thank you very much. That's very helpful. The only one was on the foreign currency loans. How much of those loans are to companies that do not generate foreign currency? And just to follow up on Zenith Insurance, I completely know that you divested the operation quite a while ago. It was more on what you said about referrals and whether that would lead to any significant revenue increase, but from what you said, it won't.
Okay. No, we were not even expecting much in terms of that at all. And it's because they are still using that name, Zenith. Over time, it will be changed in due course.
Okay.
Then on the issue of the foreign currency loans that we've given to companies that don't generate naira, dollars, I think it's not significant what we have now. Maybe roughly about 6%, thereabout.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question.
Our next question is over the line of Paula Argensanya of RenCap. Go ahead, Paula. Your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question and for the presentation. My first question is related to asset quality. So the sharp increase in transportation NPLs that we saw, does that have anything to do with Arik Air? And can you please clarify what the size of the Arik Air exposure is and how much provisions have been made? Secondly, could you please give a revised guidance for cost of risk given the current run rate? So do we expect things will moderate in the second half of the year? And thirdly, on cost, during the presentation you mentioned that most of it was driven by the AMCON levy. But if I look at the breakdown, there are certain lines that stand out, like travel costs, for example, or stationery. Could management please explain what exactly is going on here and what the outlook for cost-to-income ratio is for 2017? I think there's. Oh, and also finally, one of the last comments from Peter was that you expect to maintain this performance in the second half of the year. Does this relate to FX trading income as well? Because I think one key question is how sustainable is this line going forward? Thank you.
Thank you very much, RenCap.
Okay, our next question. Oh, sorry, I do apologize. Please carry on.
Okay, on the transportation, I think I'll, as much as possible, I'll try not to go into customer specifics. But please, we've taken provision in the aviation sector specific. And aviation clients, that is what the provision is on transportation. It's actually an aviation client, an airline. In terms of the cost, AMCON levy is actually significant. Then you remember that in the presentation too, we did talk about the general increase in cost, which Stanley also mentioned. I'm happy you even highlighted one of them, that air travel and all that. Naturally, after the devaluation, air travel went up and others. So generally, costs have gone up. But in terms of cost to income, As we said, the AMCON one is quite significant. AMCON alone, we're talking of about $10 billion that we took, that will be released. So when you look at that, well, I can assure you that we will maintain the cost to income ratio, because we've taken quite a lot in terms of provisioning accruals for cost. We've taken quite a lot in this first half. Talking about sustainability of our performance, there's no reason why we should not sustain what we have done. We've looked at the nature of the transactions that we've done. If you look at even the derivative itself or the trading income, if you look at the nature of the substance, we believe that it's something that we can sustain. Remember that we have a massive pool of dollar liquidity. I think that should actually help. Stanley, please, can you speak to the cost of risk, the guidance?
Okay, yeah. The cost of risk at the levels where it is, we expect if things remain the way they are, that it will be moderating going forward. We don't expect it to be escalated further than it is. And what we've done, again, is to be very prudent as usual, to make very aggressive provisions on some of these facilities. And that has been our way of doing business over the years. So we don't expect that major growth in that line. What we expect is even a kind of moderation on that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sorry, just as a follow-up question, when you say you expect it to moderate, to what levels, and how quickly do you think you can actually write back some of these provisions?
Okay, well, currently we're at 3.6%, you know. So we're expecting that maybe we'll remain at a level above 3, but not, it's going to come gradually, but not going up above 3. So anywhere around 3.2, 3.4 will be fine. And then we'll see as things will unfold in the market. Yeah.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from the line of Demi Ashuli of FPN Quest. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Good afternoon. Demi Ashuli from FPN Quest. Thanks for the presentation. I've got three questions. Some are clarifications of some of what you've already talked about. On FX trading, could you just confirm that the FX derivative gain is marked to market as of June, that it's not a gain that's been crystallized? I just wanted to be clear on that. Then just to go back to this OPEX question, the AMCON point that the previous caller was raising was that if you look at the H1 2016 results, you'd find that the AMCON full year figure was also taken as of June. So the year-on-year for AMCON charges doesn't really fully explain, or that shouldn't really be the focus. The focus is all the other non-AMCON charges, which were up by, I think, something like 60% if I X out AMCON charges. So you've given some commentary on the cost-to-income ratio, but the run rate X AMCON is something like 40, 50 billion. I mean, is that what we should be thinking of for the second half of this year? And then on the provisions that you referred to on the airline industry, are you saying that the specific specific provisions of 19 billion or so that I've seen in the notes, is that close to what, 100% coverage on this client, or is that a fraction of the exposure? Those are my questions for now. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. In terms of the clients we are talking of, in terms of the airline, it's about 60% of the total exposure. It's about 60% of the total exposure on that. I think that takes care of that. On the trading, Mike, please, on the trading, FX trading and derivative gain, what was your comment on that?
Yeah, we book our derivative transactions via the trading books, which implies we have to run mark to market on them. And so we run mark to market, and this is unrealized gain. However, the basis for valuation is very conservative. We are using the federal government yield curve, which is realizable in the market. It's tradable in the market. And so most likely what we have realized, what we have taken as unrealized gain will be realized eventually. We don't see any material change from what we've seen so far.
Okay. Then on the operating expenses, basically what has happened, as I said, the expectation is that inflation is trending down. So if that is happening, we also expect that cost associated with activities will not be as it will not be going up. It should be coming down as well. There are a lot of things that happened in the first half, a lot of activities that cost most of this increase, and we don't expect that to happen in the second half. So overall, we expect that this cost will trend down for the second half, not to maintain this level.
Thank you very much.
Okay, can I quickly come back on Michael's answer on the FX trading point? I appreciate the conservatism, but to link that with what Peter had said before regarding the firepower you have, given the dollar liquidity you have there, am I wrong to think that if the FX rate doesn't move that much, then the potential to do something significant going forward is also limited, or am I looking at that differently?
Well, it has nothing to do with the FX rate, because most of the transactions are swaps. Now, when you do a swap, typically you don't run any position per se. So even if FX, if Naira loses value, Naira goes to 1,000, it doesn't have significant effect on the income. The income is actually driven by what you do with the proceeds of the swap, which is Naira here. What do you do with it? And we typically buy T-bills. And so
okay.
As long as the key rates are elevated, the income will be realized as expected.
Okay, so mainly basis spreads, yeah?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Good. Next question, please.
Our next question is from the line of Mua One at SBG Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Gentlemen, thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions. The first is on asset quality, more on your power loans that is now reclassified as performing. I wanted to know if you made any write-backs or what are the opportunities for write-backs for that particular power exposure. And then also understanding what's really driven the more positive performance, because if I think about the current view on the power sector, there clearly seems to be challenges still. So more or less, what's your outlook on that particular sector going forward? And the next question is on your cost of fund. It's increased materially, and I'm just trying to understand what's driving that. So even though it's clear the interest rate environment has been more volatile, but if I think about some of your peers that have released so far, we're not seeing such high pressure. So just trying to understand what your average rate on term deposits is at the moment, and then also trying to understand if it's also been driven by the composition of your customers. Is it because you have more corporate customers, that's why we're seeing such increased volatility? And then thirdly, just wanted you to elaborate on your loan exposure to government. So I'm trying to understand the exposure mix. So is it state, federal, and local government? And what kind of risk do you associate to that, given lower government and revenues at this time?
Okay, thank you very much. I will talk on this. On the issue of the exposure to government, so the federal government in terms of loans is actually zero. Right? It's actually zero. There's no loan to the federal government as it is. So some of the loans you have, which I'll say is even at its lowest now, is basically to state government. And there are very, very, very few of them. In terms of the asset, we talk about asset quality that the power sector. What is the outlook? You see, essentially, I know when we did the issue of the provisioning that we had for the power sector, we are talking of just a client, actually. And what we've seen is you are not relying just on the asset itself to pay the loan. what we have is we have a different arrangement now, and the good news is that they've cleared all past due, and we expect that going forward we should not have problem with that. But in the power sector generally, is the outlook now very rosy? I would say no, because we still have challenges. The major one now is having a cost reflective tariff. So if you have an asset that does not have any other source of cash flow outside what is being generated by the asset itself, you are still going to have shortfall in terms of their revenue, and it will affect repayment. So to answer your question directly, in terms of outlook, that the cash flow is there for all the power companies, but there's still that revenue shortfall, which poses its own risk. I'm sure on the cost of funds, Stanley actually explained the issue of cost of funds, which, Stanley, maybe you just want to summarize that again.
Okay, good. So I mentioned a few things that accounted for that. I mentioned the Eurobond issuance. That brought in some cost because the expense is being accrued for. I also mentioned the fact that, I mean, the market, as you mentioned, also has an elevated cost, especially treasury bills high, and therefore to return deposits, even the ones you have from leaving you, you have to pay something higher. So we saw that happening. We also have a new pronouncement where deposits that were used as collateral hit out to at zero interest. Most of them, you need to pay interest at least a minimum of 30% of MPR. So a combination of all this, you know, you have the savings bond also putting pressure for lower savers to ask for higher interest rate. So if you put this together, that's also accounted for this level of cost that we have seen on.
I think they also add that the loan to government, about 90% of that relates to loans granted under the various intervention schemes that is available to the states and local government, and with a first line charge on their FARC account for the repayment. So essentially what you have is a less than 10% loan is given on bilateral basis, and for all the loans, the repayments are up to date.
Next question, please.
The next question is over to the line of Clements Adiwuye at Cardinal Stone. Clements, please go ahead with your question. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. My question is just a follow-up on the trading income, and I just want to know if you can share with us the value of your swap position and the average yield on the assets. And also, you mentioned that you have more firepower, so are you expecting to increase the value of this swap position in the second half of the year? And what do you anticipate the position will be at the close of the year?
Well, if you check the balance sheet, if you go to page page 16 and 17, or rather 15 and 16, you see the derivative assets and derivative liability. That gives you the valuation. As you can see, derivative assets is about 82 billion, while the liability is about 17 billion. It gives you a net valuation of 65 billion.
Okay.
What's the average yield on the Naira assets that you put the...
As I said, we typically invest in treasury bills, and a 1-year T-bill is about 22.5%. So that's about the average, 22.5%.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Next question,
please. Okay, the next question is over to the line of Denise Ranchard at Templeton. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi there, good day. Thanks for taking my questions. I've just got two questions. One relates to OPEX. I know you mentioned that OPEX is a lot higher due to AMCON levy and the inflation, sort of high inflation due to the Naira devaluation. I just want to talk about the AMCON levy. For the first half of last year, it's roughly 19 billion, and for the first half of this year, it's 21 billion. And you mentioned that you've taken the full AMCON charge for the full year into the first half. I don't see that tying up, so I just wanted to check with you if you can just maybe talk through the detail on that. And then the other one just relates to staff costs. I see staff costs for the first half is only up 5% year on year. There have been high inflation in Nigeria. I just want to know, has there been sort of big staff retrenchments into last year, and hence we sort of only seeing a 5% increase, I guess, based off a higher cost base from last year. So just want to understand that. And then the third question I have relates to asset quality. Just want you to give an indication of what you sort of think NPL ratio will normalize to, looking 1 to 2 years out.
Okay.
Assuming.
Let me take.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me take the AMCON charge. Prior to this year or this half year, what used to happen? The AMCON charge, most or all the banks here, what we're doing, the AMCON charge is based on your total assets. 0.5% of your total assets. As soon as it's calculated and you finish your, you start amortizing that charge when it's charged over the year. So by the end of the year, it goes off. So ordinarily for the first half of the year, you would have been seeing about 10 billion for 6 months or above 10 billion. Then within the full year, you have the 21 coming in. But we have what we've done, or what you can see, what we've done, we restated that of 2016 to show, assuming we took the full, because what you're seeing on P&L here is the restated value for 2016, which is the full for 2016, also based on the total assets for 2015 year end. So that's what has happened there. You know, the IFRC, that's the IFRIC 21, requires that levies become due as soon as they are levied by government. So the due point here is immediately your account is signed and that your total asset has been approved as your total asset for the last year. It becomes payable at that point. So that's what we've done, and we restated that for 2016 to reflect that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. On the issue of staff costs, yes, what we've done is there hasn't been any retrenchment, but we've seen people who had reason to move on, and we didn't see any need to replace them, especially at high level. That's because of the kind of buffers we've also built into our staff profile. So what you've seen there is, yes, we've also had calls to review the staff salary, and that's what is leading to that upward moderation of 5%.
Okay, thank you. And finally, on the issue of asset quality, the prognosis going forward. I first of all try to say that we've had the devaluation last year. So last year too, Nigeria went into recession. I'm sure you will agree that there's no way it will not have an impact on the quality of the asset. So I will expect that in the industry generally, asset quality should deteriorate, and it will not happen almost immediately. And that's why you are seeing it manifest at this time. So I will expect that for the industry generally, asset quality will deteriorate. But going forward in the next 2 years, even say next year, upper year, as you asked, it will actually moderate. So what we are doing now is more like immediate identification and taking provisions immediately. In 2 years, I don't expect this to continue because the economy is improving and most of the troubled loans will have been taken care of.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
Next question is from the line of Gloria Fadepe at Hearsoft. Please go ahead, Gloria. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the questions. I still do not quite understand the increase in your cost of funds. What we see here is like a 210% increase on time deposits. I mean, discounting the bonds and savings, increase in savings interest. On time deposits alone, you're moving from like 29 billion to almost 93 billion. And I mean, we've seen one of your peers release results. We didn't see this kind of quantum of increase. I'm still struggling to understand that this is totally due to the high interest rate environment. And I missed your response on the quantum of your swap position. I don't know if you gave that value when the other when the other call was made. And then on your loans to the upstream oil and gas sector, just to get a feel as to if there is any significant improvement. Most of the structured loans are to that sector. Are we seeing any improvement in terms of cash flow for the promoters in that sector? That will be all for me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Gloria. I think, let me just say, the derivative asset and liability is on the balance sheet. Even on the face of the balance sheet itself, it is there. So you can, the figures are actually there.
Okay.
On the issue of the cost of funds, I think Stanley has actually explained that severally. And I'm not even aware any of our peers have released any result, any audited result. I've not seen anyone this year. We are the first to release our audited financial for the half year. I will want Ebinda to talk on the issue of oil and gas sector, please.
Okay, for the loan to oil and gas, the upstream, yes, for all the restructured ones, we see some marginal improvements, but in terms of repayment, they are all up to date. What is also helping the sector is the fact that we've seen some slight improvement in the price of crude that average in for the half year average about $48-$49 per barrel, compared to last year where the average was much lower. Then the second point is that volume of production has also gone up. So the combination of those two has impacted favorably on the cash flow available to service the loan. So far, we haven't seen any further deterioration, and there has also been some incremental revenue accruing to them from the gas business. So if all these variables remain positive, we expect that we'll continue to experience improvements in that sector.
And okay, just one more follow-up, please. What's the OT seller's exposure? I seem to have like two figures. Some say 80 billion, some say 64 billion. Please, can you just clarify what quantum of that exposure is?
Okay, so you know, I said it's important that we should not be too specific on our clients. But I've mentioned that we've taken 30% of the provision that we have on EMTS.
Okay.
Thank you.
Our next question is from the line of Craig Metherell at Avior Capital Markets. Go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for taking my question. A couple of questions I had have already been asked, so I'll just perhaps focus on the exchange rate. Peter, I think it was a comment you made earlier in the call. You spoke about convergence and the exchange rate being expected sooner rather than later. So can you just confirm what exchange rate you used in reporting the latest financials and what you expect from the exchange rate going forward? Do you expect a movement in the official rate to the 365 level? And perhaps was there any pressure from auditors to report at that level, given in reality that's where the majority of the market is transacting? Thank you.
Thank you very much for that question. I think for the purpose of reporting, what we have is what is termed the CBN official rate, which is 305.
Yes.
Then currently talking about the exchange rate regime itself, the I&E window is currently, I would say, on the average 365. Average. Then the NYFEX, I probably say on the average it's about, say, 328. Because remember that on that NYFEX, most of those transactions are actually forward, 30, 60 days, 75 days. So if we look at the effective pricing of those NYFEX, it's probably about 340, 343. So we are looking at 365 against 343. So you will agree that the gap has actually narrowed, and convergence is probably not too far. As to what we are going to be translating at, well, either way, if there is a convergence and it's 365, I mean, so be it. We'll all translate at those at those rates, which is ideal, and we'll just move on. But the important thing is that the gap actually reduced drastically. 365.
Okay, the next question is over to the line of Tobin Nelson at Cap Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the call. I was having some difficulty reconciling the FX income with the derivative levels mentioned, $82 billion at a yield of about 22%. It wasn't really adding up. The second bit had to do with the power portfolio. It was looking at it from H1 last year and this year in terms of the MPL. It's dropped from about $31 billion to roughly about $1 billion. Has the sector generally improved that much? Thank you.
Hello?
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 Okay, I think your line is extremely very faint. We could hardly hear you.
Okay, I said the first question was on the FX income.
We got that. Then the second one on power.
The second one was on the power portfolio. Looking at the NPL from last year and this year, and extrapolating the numbers, the NPLs dropped from about 31 billion naira to roughly about 1 billion naira. And the question is, has the outlook for that sector improved so significantly, or is it that it's the obligor you are exposed to that has had such an improvement in their operations?
Okay, thank you very much. I've explained in detail the issue of the power portfolio, exactly the question you asked now. The issue of the provisioning, you will even see there in terms of the provisioning by MPL by sector, you will have seen the reduction, and I did explain that the power sector provisioning itself is a specific obligor who has cleared, and the revenue, the arrangement we have now is not just from that asset alone. It is from other sources of cash flow, which they have those businesses with us. The outlook itself, as long as we don't have a cost-reflective tariff, the outlook will still be challenged because there's no cost-reflective tariff for now. So in terms of revenue, there's still a shortfall. So if you are relying on the asset alone, that shortfall will still be there. I think that explains that. On the FX income, Mike, do you want to explain that again?
Please. When we talk about valuation, which leads to assets and liability, we are talking about profit and loss. We are not talking about the nominal value here. So if we check the balance sheet, for example, and you check the total asset, which is about $85 billion, and you check the total liability, which is about $17 billion, if you do the next, you're going to have a positive value of $65 billion. Now, if you go and check your trading income is about $65 billion. So the valuation, which translates to assets and liability, is your profit and loss. The nominal value is much, much higher than this. You can do the math, do 22% and try to calculate what will give you this kind of profit. It's obviously over $1 billion. And
thank you very much.
So the nominal value is about over $1 billion.
Much higher.
Much higher. Okay, thank you.
Next question is from the line of Richard Ladbrook at Investec. Please go ahead, Richard. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for your time today.
Good afternoon.
Quick question, probably for Michael, which is just on your FX exposures, where we seem to be focusing quite a lot this afternoon. But on slide 17, where you show us the breakdown of your balance sheet, that's obviously your unbalance sheet positions. Because if one were to look at that, would imply that you're short foreign currency, with your total assets exceeding your liabilities by 702 billion, but you've got 750 billion in Naira. So you've got 40-odd that you're short. So that disclosure would imply that should you move your accounting or currency from 305 to 320 or 360, that you'd take a loss through your books. What is the real position, where that's the on-balance sheet position? I'd assume you're hedged off-balance sheet with these derivatives that we've been talking about today. Perhaps another way to ask the question quite simply is, if you were to mark your books to using 360, how would your equity position be impacted, either through the P&L or perhaps through the statement of changes in equity?
Okay, so if you check that slide 17, check the heading, balance sheet financial assets and liabilities. So what you are seeing here is just the financial assets and liabilities. It does not include the non-financial assets and liabilities. So if equity, for example, is not there, structures are not there. Secondly, when we do a forward is, or a swap, the near leg, which is the spot leg, sits on the balance sheet, while the far leg sits off the balance sheet. So when you combine all our contingent obligatory position of balance sheet, add it to the non-financial assets and liability with this, you're going to have a positive position of about $230 million, which we have always said that it's the position that we are carrying. So if there's a movement in exchange rate, we actually will gain rather than lose.
Okay, so it's $130 million long.
About 230
million. Sorry, 230.
Correct.
Okay, great. Many thanks. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Investec. Next question, please.
Next question is from Arm Investment, and it's Emmanuel Adlake. Please go ahead. Your line is now open. Sir, please go ahead. Your line is open. If you could take yourself off mute. Sorry, her name is Emmanuel Adeleke of ARM Investments. Please go ahead. Your line is open. Okay, I think she may be on mute as she is not replying, so we'll go to the next question, which is Christopher White at Somerset Capital. Please go ahead, Christopher.
Hello. We just had a few questions. The first one is on your loan book. The proportion of loans that you classify as below B and double B to triple B on your internal rating system has fallen quite dramatically in the last 6 months. Is that because of an improvement in asset quality, or have you changed the way that you classify loans?
Okay, I think the basic, any kind of classification will not change our basis of classification. Any movement you will see will be some improvement in or activities or that particular, the obligors that were classified on those in those classes before.
So that would imply that you've seen an improvement in asset quality across your loan portfolio in the last 6 months. Is that a fair reflection of what you've seen?
No, it depends. It's based on class, those classes, but generally it's not, we cannot say on a general level because of the way the environment is, but if there are particular obligors we've lent to and we see some activities in their, some improvement in the activities, that could affect their classification at any point.
And again, we're talking of assets that are already performing. It's just that they've, in terms of the performance over the period, they've been migrated to the next notch. It's not as if they are coming from a deteriorated level to a much higher level. They are already performing, and we just move a notch up.
Okay. Thank you. And then just on your cost of funding, I believe the majority of the increase in the cost of funding was to do with time deposits. could you tell us what proportion of your total deposits is made up by time deposits?
That's about 17%, but that's a point number. Now, let me also say that within this period, there were times we had huge balances on time deposits. But at the point we are reporting, you will notice that deposits came down. Based on our own strategy, we had to let some of these deposits, which we felt were of high cost, to go. So if you're looking at the point position and comparing it, it will not give a reflective position of how the cost came in. You know, we had some that we had to retain, we had to defend, and all that. But over time, we have decided to let some of those high-cost deposits go.
Okay. So they are currently 17%, but they were a higher proportion at different points
points within the period, yes. As well.
Okay. Thanks.
I must say that management is looking at it also carefully, and we think in the second half of the year, we'll do much better than we did in the first half of the year.
Okay, on your average cost of deposits?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. And then finally, your loan book, in terms of your gross loans, contracted a bit in the first half. Is that because there just isn't demand at the moment from high-quality borrowers because the economy is still weak? How does that tie in with the fact that you say that the economy is beginning to improve?
Okay, thank you very much. I think it's not as if there is no demand. The demand will always be there, even if we are perpetually in a recession. So people still want loans to come out of recession. But you, as a bank, as a financier, there are certain situations you see in the environment that you have to be exceedingly very careful. And that's basically what we've done. We are watching the situation, and you will have seen the corresponding increase in our investment in government securities. It's part of our own risk minimization strategy. Yes, the environment is improving, there's no doubt, but that does not necessarily mean that we should just jump and start increasing our lending activities immediately. We are still watching the situation of things, and selectively we will lend to customers. So this is a time to be very cautious, and as things continue to improve, we'll continue to see and watch. But I can assure you that the demand is always there, and it's even increasing.
That makes sense. Thank you very much. That's all we had.
Thank you.
Okay, we now go to the line of Rahul Shah at Exotix Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you very much. Couple of questions from my side. Just to follow up on what you just said, do you think the outlook for loan growth in the second half will also be quite limited from your side, or do you think you might have a bit more appetite for credit? And the second question is on IFRS 9, if you can give any update there in terms of the potential impact on the capital base and your thoughts on next year's risk costs. Thank you.
Okay, let me just say, in terms of the outlook, we are already in August, so essentially we have 4 months to the end of the financial year. I think loan growth is still going to be muted. Loan growth is still going to be muted because, as I said, we are still coming out from recession. And I want to emphasize that the demand is still strong. But again, it's a deliberate strategy to say this is not the time to be overtly aggressive in terms of loan growth. So for end of the year, this last 4 months, I don't expect that we'll see any major appreciable growth in loans. Stanley, on the IFRS?
Yeah, on the IFRS, yes, we are at the stage where we are. We are still all running scenarios on the impact what we have on impairment particularly. And our projection is that if you have a 20% impact on impairment, it could lead to 1% drop in capital. But overall, we believe that based on what we've seen, we at 21% of our capital adequacy, the overall the impact we are seeing currently may not be more than 1 to 2% drop in capital, which will still keep us reasonably at a very good level. Yeah.
Sorry, just to clarify on that, a 1% drop in capital ratios or a 1% drop in capital?
Capital adequacy ratio.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
Okay, before we go on to the next question, which is Abba Sakura at Schroders, if anybody has any final questions, could you please press 0 and then 1 on your phone keypad now? And we go to the next one, which is Abba Sakura at Schroders. Please go ahead.
Hi. Yes. Thanks for taking the questions. So, just on the answer you just gave, did you was that the CAR impact if you use the FX rate at say 365? Is that what you said?
IFRS. We're talking about
IFRS. Okay. So, what would be the impact of using an FX rate of, let's say, 360 on the capital adequacy ratio? Because obviously, you get your risk-weighted assets up.
Okay. We have run scenarios up to 400 naira to the dollar, and the impact on us is not very significant. We think we're still within reasonable ratios, and we'll have sufficient buffer to take in any other risk. We also don't expect it to go more than 2% if we are to take in any additional increase in the naira value to the dollar. We run scenarios up to 450, up to 500, and we think we are still very comfortable to take in any appreciable increase or devaluation of the naira.
Okay. And I just wanted to, maybe Michael can explain in a tiny bit more detail in terms of the FX gain, because obviously, I mean, the big item on the P&L is the trading income and also the foreign currency revaluation gain, which is in other operating income. So you've got maybe 46 billion in FX trading income, then you've got 19 billion in treasury bill trading income. And from what Michael said earlier, I guess, you know, the sum total of that is 65 billion, which is roughly what he's talking about in terms of the change in value of the derivatives. So I just want to confirm, is that the 65 billion he was talking about? Those two are from the derivative value chain. And then you've got about 5.5 billion in what's called foreign currency revaluation gain, which I'm guessing is the impact of a revaluation of your net assets that are in dollars. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's fairly correct. Fairly correct.
Fairly correct. Okay, that's good. That's good for me. Thank you. Okay, and then I guess on the other side, which people have asked a lot about the OPEX side, so I don't want to go over it a million times, but I think the key point, if we look at note 12 in the accounts, not in the presentation, in the actual accounts that you put out, I mean, you can see there's quite a lot of lines where the OPEX has really increased a lot, and I think it would be just useful if you could explain a few of them. So I'll just mention a few here. So, for example, training and development has gone from 2 billion last year to 4 billion this year. IT has gone from 3 to 6. Advertising has gone from 3 to almost 6 as well. Corporate promotions have gone from less than 1 to 2. So, you know, these are lots of different lines that have basically doubled or almost doubled over the year. And that's nothing to do with AMCON. That's, you know, it's potentially, obviously, there's some of that is from inflation or the Naira devaluation. But maybe if you just talk through a few of those, and obviously there can be good reasons for them. You might be investing more in IT. You might be, advertising more to try and take market share. But if we just understand a little bit what's driving those OPEX increases so that we can get a bit of comfort that the cost of income will stay under control.
Okay, let me just say, I mean, thank you very much for this. And you've mentioned some specific lines. And I want to say that, you see, the impact of the devaluation too has something to do with this. If we take training, for example, training in itself, our senior management staff, they are trained in business schools outside the country. And someone did allude to the fact that even cost of air travel went up. It's part of the whole thing, too, when you look at the training itself, because when you pay in all these business schools, even if the price has not gone up, the cost, but when you look at what you are translating at, it's almost double. So you'll likely see 100% increase in this training for this half year. And it's not something you amortize over 12 months. You take them basically almost immediately. Mm-hmm. Both of our colleagues went on training within that period, so that itself will account for that. As you know, IT expenses is actually FX driven. Mm-hmm. If you are paying for licenses and all that, most of them, and even for other software services where you are paying your annual fees, even your basic Microsoft, they are basically driven in dollar terms. They are FX related. So sometimes it is important. Even advertising, we even have FX component of that. So you could see that that itself is affected. It has affected some of the costs. But I must say that will this be something that will continue for 12 months? It's not a monthly expense. But as they come, you take that hit almost immediately. So I'll probably say exchange rate too actually accounted for some of these OPEX that we are talking of.
Okay, so and are you translating those at the NAFEX rates, because that's probably the rate you're actually using to pay, say, your license fees for IT, or is that being done at 305 as well?
That's basically the window that you use to pay.
Okay.
Exactly NAFEX.
Which is NAFEX. Okay, fine. So that actually, that's probably taken the full deval now. Okay, and
absolutely.
Then just my final question then is just, obviously, as you said, it's August, there's not much of the year left, but unless I missed it, I haven't seen any updated guidance for you on 2017 numbers, and I was just wondering if there's some headline, maybe guidance you can give in terms of, you know, whether it's cost of risk, which I know you mentioned would be around 3% or so, but maybe total OPEX growth, return on equity, payout ratios, and any of the normal guidance that you give, if there's any updates that you could give the market.
Okay, I think we actually have the guidance. Mike, you want to share some highlights there?
Okay, so we have the guidance here. I'll start with capital adequacy ratio. We are guiding around 20% for full year 2017. Return on average equity, it's around 20%, 19-20%. Usually that's what we guide for full year, 19-20%. Yeah. For cost to income ratio, we've already said that we're going to stay around 57%. We don't think we'll go very far from there, considering where we are at the moment. We expect it to come down. Since we're already on 57%, we think we'll be slightly below 57% for cost to income ratio. For return on assets, we are guiding above 3% for return on assets. NIM, we guided 8% for full year 2018. I think we are on course, 2017, we are on course to achieve that. Liquidity ratio, we are above 60%. We think we'll be around that level. Cost of funds, we are currently on 6.3%. We think we'll come down a bit in the second part of the year. So we are guiding about 6% or maybe 5.5%, something lower than that. And I think those are the major ones. Loan growth, we got at 10% initially, but from our indication, that might not be possible. So we're still within 10%. We don't think we'll get to that, but we'll stay within 10%. Deposit growth, also the same thing as guided. Effective tax rate around 19% for full year.
Okay, great. Thank you.
The next question, please.
Okay, we now go back to the line of Emmanuel Adeleke of ARM Investments. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Okay, thanks very much for the call.
Sorry, sir. As I said to you when I connected to you before, your voice is very, very quiet. We cannot actually hear your question.
Okay. Thanks very much for the conference call. So no, I don't have any questions to ask now. Basically, answered all questions I wanted to ask. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. So, do we have any further
yes.
questions?
Yes, we go to Upwe Nelson at Jamaican Investment. Please go ahead. Your line is now open. Hello, please go ahead. Your line is now open. Okay.
Yes, I can. Just some more clarification on the provision to the telecom sector. You spoke about Etisalat. Is the provision related to the syndicated loan? Is it your bilateral portion, or is it for both?
Well, when we look at provisioning, we look at aggregate, total. We don't separate whether it's syndication or whatever it is. It's total exposure. Thank you. Next question, please, if any.
Yes, our final question for today is from Emmanuel Baloru at Chapel Hill. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Nan Ray from Chapel Hill. Just a quick question on your view on rates. I mean, you bet fat on the high yields, and what's your expectation? Do you expect it to remain high, or do you expect some it to come down? We're hearing rumbles about government refinancing T-bills with dollars, and you know, what kind of impact do you see that will have overall on the business or financial for the sector? Thank you.
Interest rate.
Well, so they had to look at it to look at what the central bank is doing. The central bank has taken a tight monetary stance to support the currency. We think in the the second half of the year, that stance will continue. So we think the high yield environment will continue for the full year 2017. What will happen next year, nobody knows. If there's very positive improvement in the environment, in terms of economic growth, in terms of currency stability, maybe the rates will come down. But for the second half of the year, we are of the strong opinion that the central bank will remain tight in their stance and the high yield environment will continue.
Okay, thank you very much. And I think at this point, if we have no other question, I really want to thank you all for dialing in and for all the questions you've asked, which I'll probably say they are very enlightening. And I must assure you that we'll continue to work hard. We'll continue to work assiduously to ensure that we maintain our current position. And as I did say earlier, we will expect that our half year, we should be able to replicate the performance we've achieved during the half year. We want to assure all our investors that in terms of risk, we will continue to be very aggressive when it comes to taking provisions. And I'll say we've built buffers to ensure that even latent losses that we've not seen, we have the capacity to absorb them, which is what we've demonstrated in previous years and in this half year. So I want to thank you all for dialing in, and I wish you all the very best. Thank you very much.
This now concludes today's call. Thank you very much for attending. You can now disconnect your lines.